Today is October 31st, 2024. Happy Halloween. Happy last day of October. My name is Maureen. I'll be reading this week's edition of the Iroquois Times Republic. There are four or five articles on the front page, and we'll begin with the top one. The Iroquois County Board of Health has officially hired a new public health administrator. According to information from the board, Robin Allen, formerly the fiscal director at the Illinois Department of Human Services Shapiro Center, accepted the administrator position following the October 2nd Board of Health special meeting. Allen holds multiple degrees, including a master's in biology and an MBA, reflecting a diverse academic background. She remains actively involved in community service by participating in the Animal Outreach Program at Olivet Nazarene University and by serving as a guest speaker for the Nature Conservancy. With extensive experience in public administration, she is enthusiastic to support the Iroquois County Public Health Department's mission and community impact. Her anticipated start date is November 1st. On a Halloween-related note, there were between 4 to 450 children who participated in the Watsika Area Chamber of Commerce Trunk or Treat event October 23rd. Many of them had first visited the Watsika Park District for the costume parade. The events were hosted at the Park District's daycare building and the First Trust and Savings parking lot. There were 25 businesses and organizations that participated in the event. Winners were chosen for the decorated trunks. The Iroquois County Board discussed a vacancy on the board during the October 8th meeting. This vacancy was created due to board member Michael McTaggart resigning in order to focus more on his work and family life. According to information from the Iroquois County Republican Party, the rules state that a resigning board member's successor must be from the same political party as the person who resigned. The Iroquois County Republican Party is seeking a Republican who will serve on the county board through 2026. Any Republican applicant must live in District 1, which includes the townships of Milks Grove, Chabance, Ashcombe, Martinton, Papineau, Beaver, and Beaverville, located in the northern part of Iroquois County. It includes municipalities such as Chabance, Clifton, Ashcombe, Martinton, Papineau, Donovan, and Beaverville. A detailed map can be found on the county's website. If interested in serving, please contact Iroquois County Republican Party Chairman Mitchell Bentz. The Iroquois County Genealogical Society conducted a cemetery walk at Maple Grove Cemetery October 13th. Walkers, those who walked through the cemetery, included 8 or 10 residents. Greeters at the cemetery gate were several other residents, and guides for the guests were provided. Stories were told of George Bond's untimely death. It's the story of a young husband and father who left his home and did not return and was eventually found deceased by the railroad. The second historical figure discussed was Johann van Hovelen, who is buried in the Schwer Lutheran Church Cemetery. His family history, which included a lot of sevens, seven children, seven siblings, seven grandchildren, etc., was all discussed. The story of two young men buried in the cemetery that died in a farm accident was discussed. These young men died in a terrible accident while working with their father. And a more recent resident of the cemetery had his information read. Terry Wayne Ward, who died at the age of 71 of DeMont, Indiana, in 2018. His family life and his work history, including being a lineman, was discussed. In a separate story, Iroquois County State's Attorney James Devine has issued a press release regarding the death of an Ashcombe man that occurred in September at Sheldon. It reads, on September 7, 2024, the Iroquois County Sheriff's Department, Illinois State Police, Newton County, Indiana Sheriff's Department, and the Kentland, Indiana Police Department responded to the report of an alleged kidnapping in progress regarding a vehicle driven by a suspect named Andrew Roselius, R-O-S-E-L-I-U-S, 37 years of age, of Ashcombe. The suspect vehicle was identified in rural Iroquois County, and an attempt was made by law enforcement to stop the vehicle. When the subject refused to stop, it traveled from Iroquois County into Newton County, Indiana, and then back into Iroquois County, where it hit another vehicle on a public road in the village of Sheldon. Once stopped, the vehicle, driven by Andrew Roselius, was surrounded by law enforcement. It was reported that Mr. Roselius was armed and suicidal. A confrontation occurred between law enforcement and Mr. Roselius while he was seated in his vehicle after repeated requests by law enforcement for Mr. Roselius to show his hands and leave his vehicle. Mr. Roselius displayed a revolver and fired one shot, which struck a Newton County, Indiana deputy in the head, which left him critically wounded. As a result of the shot, an Iroquois County deputy returned fire by striking Mr. Roselius in the head. He was pronounced dead at the scene. The Newton County deputy died from his wounds on September 11th. The Illinois State Police Zone 5 Investigations Team conducted an investigation of the law enforcement-involved shooting. After a thorough examination of witness accounts and autopsy findings, the Iroquois County State's Attorney's Office was presented with all relevant investigatory information. The Iroquois County State's Attorney Jim Devine concluded that the death of Andrew Roselius by law enforcement was justified. No further action will be taken by the State's Attorney's Office. Article titled, Lawmakers Urge Administration to Take Action to Protect Correctional Officers. Recent media reports and informational picket rallies have brought attention to concerns about exposure to hazardous substances within prisons operated by the Illinois Department of Corrections. Given the dangers being faced by correctional officers across the state, State Senator Tom Bennett, State Senator Terry Bryant, and State Representative Dennis Tipsword recently met with Pontiac Correctional Center staff to discuss the ongoing drug exposure incidents, concerns, and possible solutions, according to a news release from Senator Bennett's office. Senator Bennett stated, "Our correctional staff are on the front lines facing escalating dangers every day. The pickets last week made it clear the administration must step up and prioritize the safety of these men and women. Along with several of my colleagues, I am advocating for comprehensive safety measures to be put in place. Governor Pritzker and IDOC leadership must take these growing threats seriously and act now to protect those who work and live within our correctional system. A recurring issue in correctional facilities across Illinois involves reports of exposures to dangerous substances, with representatives from the facility saying that papers soaked in dangerous drugs are being sent to inmates and putting the lives of correctional center staff and inmates at risk daily. Ask Me, the union representing the state's correctional officers, issued the following report detailing the reports and exposure incidents happening across IDOC facilities in Illinois. Senator Bryant said, "For more than 2 years, I've been working to bring attention to the dangerous conditions that both correctional officers and residents in our facilities have had to endure for far too long. These recent rallies held by Ask Me members make it clear that this problem can no longer be ignored by this administration. It is well past time for swift and meaningful measures to be implemented to ensure the health and safety of everyone who lives and works within these facilities." Representative Tipsword said, "Safe mail in prisons and jails is not something new. Several other nearby states and jails right here in Illinois have third-party vendors digitize mail. The mail is looked at on a secure tablet, thus keeping staff and inmates safe. The program has little or no cost to facilitate, and the governor and director must take this seriously and act immediately before there is another death. Senator Bennett, along with Senator Bryant and Representative Tipsworth, remain committed to ensuring that the safety of those working and residing in Illinois correctional facilities, urging the administration to take swift action to address this ongoing crisis. A story from Watsika. On October 6th, Watsika First United Methodist Church celebrated the 175th anniversary of Methodism in Watsika and 115 years of the church building. According to information from the church, Pastor Sylvester Weatherall was the guest speaker, Cheryl Stichnoth provided special music, and many of the church family, both present and former members, attended the morning service and the following potluck dinner. During the morning service, World Communion Day was celebrated and the church building was rededicated. The Watsika Methodist Church was first organized by circuit rider Reverend U.J. Giddings. The first church building was erected in 1851. Second and third church buildings were on South 3rd Street in 1862 and 1891. The present building of Bedford Limestone was completed in 1909. On 4th Street. During the 175 years of serving God in the community, 58 pastors have been a part of the congregation. Pastor Darla Holden has been with the congregation since 2022. The Board of Education of Crescent Iroquois Community Unit School District 249 met Monday, October 21st. Board President Steve Massey called the meeting to order at 7 p.m. I'll summarize what they have written on here. Superintendent Principal Lucas Schroeder led discussion on the high school property, then discussed the tax levy, which will be presented at the November meeting and be voted on at the December meeting. The Finance Committee, made up of Steve Massey and Becky Dirks, will meet prior to the November meeting. Insurance plans for the district were discussed as the plan is renewed each December 1st. The rates, as with most insurances, have increased. For the principal's report, Schroeder said the September walkathon collected over $8,000, which will be used for student activities, trips, risers for the music department, and books for the book vending machine. The board adjourned to executive session to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the district or legal counsel for the district, including hearing testimony on a complaint lodged against an employee or against legal counsel for the district to determine its validity. The Extension Program Coordinator, Vanessa Jones, will be hosting a holiday cooking class at the Hibson Public Library November 7th at 1 p.m. Discover how to transform your favorite festive dishes into healthier, flavorful creations. From lightened up classics to innovative new recipes, you'll learn how to make the holidays enjoyable without sacrificing taste. This class is perfect for anyone looking to celebrate the season while staying on track with their wellness goal. Culinary expert Vanessa Jones will guide participants through a cooking demonstration, sharing tips and tricks for creating healthy, delicious holiday meals. Participants can sample their creations and take home recipes to enjoy throughout the season. The class is free, but registration by November 6th is required. News from the Iroquois County Historical Society that they will be sponsoring a program on Elizabeth Cady Stanton. On Sunday, November 3rd at 1:30 p.m., the presentation will take place in the courtroom of the Old Courthouse Museum on Cherry Street in Watsika. Portraying Stanton will be Laura Keyes, who is well known for portraying historic women and lecturing on historic topics since 2008. Keyes, a librarian, enjoys researching literary symbolism and was contracted to write a book on that subject. She's been active in community theater in Illinois and Wisconsin since 1999 and has served on the board of directors of Peck Playhouse Theater. Currently, she is serving on the board of directors for the Wheels of Time Museum, the Laura Ingalls Wilder Legacy and Research Association, the Association of Lincoln Presenters, and the Illinois Library Association. In her spare time, she's an avid baker and a cat enthusiast. For more than 50 years, Elizabeth Cady Stanton fought for equal rights for women. When she passed away in 1902, she left behind a legacy of her crusade for female equality in myriad writings, which would inspire feminists for more than a century. Keys will perform as Stanton in 1866 when the Civil War is over, but the battle for women's suffrage is just beginning. Launched by Stanton in 1848 in Seneca Falls, New York, the women's suffrage movement grew into one of the most impassioned crusades in American history. This movement united women of all generations, backgrounds, and ideologies in the fight for the right for women to vote. Decades of organizing, petitioning, lobbying, protesting, and marching had to be done in order to build enough support for a constitutional amendment for the right to vote and for Congress to pass it. Come hear a full story on Stanton in this free program. Donations are gladly accepted so more programs like this can be presented. In obituaries, Helen Maxine Stroll Triado, T-R-E-A-D-O, 82 years of age, of Kentland, passed away October 22nd in Brook. Visitation was held on Monday, October 28th, with a funeral mass following. Interment will be held privately. Memorial contributions may be made to the Jasper Newton Foundation Domestic and Fine Arts Building Renovation Project in Rensselaer, Indiana, or the Newton County 4-H Council in Morocco, Indiana. Arrangements were entrusted to Gertz Windler Keller Funeral Homes in Goodland, Indiana. David R. Houk, H-O-U-K, a resident of Palm Bay, Florida, and formerly of Monticello, went to be with our Lord and Savior October 17th, 2024. Friends could have called Monday, October 28th at the Fred Miller Memorial Chapel of Roshka Roth and Clapper Funeral Home of Monticello. A graveside committal service followed this visitation at Idaville Cemetery. Donald J. Miller, 88 years of age, of Rensselaer, passed away Saturday, October 26th. Private burial will take place at Remington Cemetery. Steinke Funeral Home is honored to be handling those arrangements. Memories and condolences may be shared online at the SteinkeFuneralHome.com site. There's a relatively long article regarding ex-Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan that I will try to summarize. Capital News Illinois reporter Hannah Meisel is covering the corruption trial of ex-Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan from the Dirksen Federal Courthouse in Chicago this week. The former speaker, who left office under growing pressure related to the FBI investigation surrounding him in early 2021, faces 23 counts of racketeering, bribery, extortion, and wire fraud. For the full background on the trial, the years-long investigation of Madigan's fall from power, read Ms. Meisel's preview story here in this publication in the past. To summarize, prosecutors allege Madigan used his political power in various offices, including as a partner in his law firm, as a criminal enterprise to protect and enhance his power while enriching himself and his allies. But his defense attorneys argue the state is trying to criminalize the political process and baseline constituent services. His co-defendant, Mike McLean, a veteran state house lobbyist and longtime Madigan confidant, was already convicted on public corruption charges last year in the separate but related ComEd 4 trial. The feds are again trying to show McLean is an agent of Madigan, while his defense attorneys say he's simply engaged in legal relationship maintenance, a core function of lobbying. Below is a rundown of the coverage where the trial is scheduled each Monday through Thursday well into December. In a medical story, there are two surgical options to treat breast cancer, lumpectomy and mastectomy, but there are many more reasons why women choose one over another, says Sarah McLaughlin, MD, a breast surgical oncologist and chair of the Department of Surgery at Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville, Florida. Some of that can be cancer-based, some of it can be family, history and genetics, some of it can be personal peace of mind, Dr. McLaughlin explains. More than 2 million women are diagnosed with breast cancer every year, according to the World Health Organization. Advances in treatment, including surgical innovations, are helping women and their healthcare teams personalize care and improve quality of life. Breast cancer treatment involves a surgery to remove the cancer from the breast. It's often used with other treatments such as radiation therapy, chemotherapy, hormone therapy, and targeted therapy. Surgery may also be used to reduce the risk of future cancer. Dr. McLaughlin's research focuses on improving the quality of life for breast cancer survivors. She is contributing to the establishment of a breast organoid biobank at Mayo Clinic using excess breast tissue from volunteers to speed research. She states, breast cancer patients are living longer and longer and longer, so issues of survivorship are becoming much more important. Dr. McLaughlin's work includes studies to predict, prevent, and improve treatment of lymphedema, including identifying biomarkers and developing tailored treatment strategies. She says, there's a lot of current focus on techniques to reduce the risk of developing lymphedema. The intense focus on management therapy related to it becomes time-consuming, expensive, and painful for patients to manage. We want to try to reduce that as much as possible. Dr. McLaughlin ended saying that our goal is to do as little as possible while achieving the highest level of success, which is a long-term survival. Article titled, Indiana Death Row Inmate Joseph Corcoran Files to Reopen Appeal Window in Death Penalty Case. Legal counsel for an Indiana man on death row have petitioned for the Allen County Superior Court to throw out a two-decade-old ruling that struck the option for post-conviction relief. Joseph Corcoran was convicted of murdering four people in Fort Wayne in 1997 and was sentenced to death in 1999. It wasn't until earlier this summer in June that the Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita filed to schedule an execution date after the state obtained pentobarbital, a lethal drug increasingly being used around the country to carry out death warrants. Corcoran's execution, scheduled for December 18th, would be the first in Indiana since 2009. In the Thursday filing, Corcoran's Indiana public defender, Amy Carozas, mentioned that her client was and continues to be severely mentally ill. In the early 2000s, when the time was still ripe for Corcoran to initiate post-conviction review, he refused to sign the post-conviction petition. Given recent favorable exceptions made by state Supreme Court justices to allow tardy petitions, along with an increasing tendency nationwide to exempt those with mental illness from the death penalty, the lawyer argued for her client's appeal window to be reopened. Corcoran's attorneys seek second chance at a petition. State's attorneys originally offered Corcoran a life sentence if he would accept a plea or waive jury. He refused, prompting the state to file a request for the death penalty 2 days later, according to court records. At sentencing, Corcoran stated that he wanted to waive all his appeals. Corcoran's lawyers repeatedly insisted he is gravely mentally ill and has been diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia, which they argued should further disqualify the inmate from capital punishment. A decision regarding the last-ditch plea will be left to Indiana's governor. Longtime state veterinarian Brett Marsh bid farewell in a meeting Monday about seeking a replacement. He takes over as the next dean and hospital CEO of Purdue University's College of Veterinary Medicine next week. He states, people say the time passes quickly, and it certainly has. In addition to the over 30 years in this role as state veterinarian, which is hard for me to imagine, I will complete 40 years with the state of Indiana, so I will officially retire from the state of Indiana, then take a position at Purdue. It has been a great honor for me to serve in this role. The state veterinarian and board are charged with livestock contagious disease control, animal neglect investigations, and meat, poultry, and dairy inspections. They also help animal owners after large-scale disasters like floods and tornadoes. A Purdue University press release credited Dr. Marsh with leading an effort to establish the Indiana Center for Animal Policy to explore creative solutions to the challenges of delivering high-quality vet medicine to citizens throughout the state. Other highlights include during his decades-long service establishing multiple programs focusing on animal health as well as public health, establishing a historic initiative for a disaster preparedness plan for animals, establishing an information network to alert vets and animal owners to the threat of foreign animal diseases and emerging domestic diseases, establishing an advanced animal disease traceability system for the state, including requirement for premises registration for livestock, electronic tag distribution, and advanced training for veterinarians statewide in the use of electronic certificates of veterinary inspection, improving speed and efficiency for disease investigation. In agriculture news, ag machinery sales are taking a hit as farmers' balance sheets tighten, but the equipment industry has been preparing for the downturn. The Association of Equipment Manufacturers Senior Vice President Kurt Blades told Farm Week, over the course of history, the price of corn and the sale of tractors over 40 horsepower tend to track 1-to-1. And we know corn prices are down right now, so it is to be expected. AEM's August equipment sales report showed total sales of ag tractors in the U.S. dropped 19% and combine sales fell 19% from a year ago. Blade said the industry learned some hard lessons from the recent economic downturn and is better prepared for this next phase in the cycle. Manufacturers have been working closely with the dealers to understand what the supply chain needs are and what the market demand is. The last thing you want is too much inventory at the dealer lot because that has a negative impact on the dealer, used prices, and the rural economy. A report by Moody's Ratings suggests the three largest ag equipment manufacturers, AGCO Corp, CNH Industrial, and Deere, are better positioned to deal with weakening demand compared to the 2014-16 downturn. The report showed the top three manufacturers are cutting back sharply on production in 2024 to decrease inventory levels in preparation for 2025. Blade said this generation of machines is 20% more fuel efficient than the previous generation, allowing farmers to reduce diesel costs. He adds, farmers see these as business decisions, not just emotional decisions, and they are investing in technology to make sure that they are as operationally efficient as they possibly can be to survive those downturns. Seth Crawford, the general manager of PTx, told Farm Week that investing in companies like Precision Planting and Trimble has helped them remain innovative and focus on farmers' needs. Crawford said the Precision Planting division allows the company to bring technologies to market that help farmers enhance their existing fleet of equipment so they don't need to make that big capital investment. They can make a small investment with a fast paycheck that can bring them an almost instant return in one operating cycle. This concludes reading of this week's edition of the Iroquois County Times-Republic. Enjoy the rest of your week. Thank you so much.